We meet Wisconsin's new poet laureate for 2021-2022 here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our state's Poet Laureate Commission is a program of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. It selected Dasha Kelly Hamilton of Milwaukee to be the 9th Wisconsin Poet Laureate. She takes the torch from Margaret Rosga, also of Milwaukee. What do you want to ask our new Poet Laureate? Do you share the poems you write, and with whom? Do you resolve to read more poems this year? Maybe you subscribe to a poem a day from the Academy of American Poets, like I do. Join in 800-642-1234. Dasha Kelly Hamilton has been a public poet for over 20 years. She is the author of 2 novels, 3 poetry collections, 4 spoken word albums, and a collection of personal vignettes. Dasha, welcome back to the Ideas Network, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's good to be with you this morning.
Yes. Tell us about what this role entails for you.
I explained it especially to my munchkins and my uncles that I am the ambassador for poetry. And the role of the laureate gets to be shaped by each laureate who takes the platform and fills those shoes. But ideally, it is to promote the art. It is to insert poems and poetry and poets into our everyday lives. And in my experience has been more of reminding all of us that poetry's always here, always around us and in us anyway, and to exercise that almost superpower as a way to keep us together and to remind us that we're all important, all of our stories.
Yeah, it seems as if you're trying to say to us that there's poetry inside all of us, that you're making it more accessible, that poetry isn't about someone else who does it, it's about you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in the years that I've been able to be in this world, there's a person who has always scribbled poems and has never shared them, wasn't sure if they should, and they're so excited, like a secret, to be able to reveal this little back pocket of their journal, of this place where they escape to practice with words, to sort through their feelings, to make sense of life. And then there are the folks who, on the other end of the spectrum, could care less, would rather not, and are almost offended if you ask them to sort through a poem. And I was that person too. And in a lot of those occasions is how we're introduced to poetry. And of course, there's some folks that don't like it. Like, I don't like root beer. There are things that people have tastes and preferences. And right in the middle, there are the majority of folks who, of course, we've all been exposed to poems. And either how you're introduced to it, you're not sure how you're supposed to walk up to a poem. Sometimes we are exposed to only the canons of the late, great, dead white men, I like to say. And if you're not already connected to playful language that way, or literally reading between the lines, poetry can be frustrating because you know there's a meaning in there and it's not reaching out to grab you. So it's not an explicit art sometimes, even though it's using English words. And that's what can be, I know for me, yeah, that's what was initially frustrating about the craft. So I get to connect people to this art, which also is a healing balm, by connecting them to the pulse. I like to call it the pulse of poetry, the so what of it all.
Yeah.
And when people get to the so what of it all, it doesn't matter the parts that you don't understand, because this one line resonated with you. And in that case, the poem has done its job.
The healing qualities, I'm thinking throughout time, poetry has always been there in the most challenging circumstances. Poets have been at the forefront to try to create change for people. I'm thinking about some favorites, you know, Maya Angelou and Langston Hughes, Adrian Rich. You are the first Black woman to be named State Poet Laureate. Is there something you'd like to say about that?
Oh, my goodness, especially in these days that we are all marveling at. I have so much I want to say about that. And at the same time, I don't. So I'm in this position, and it's not an unfamiliar one, where I am often in a room with other residents or thinkers or educators or folks who haven't been in a room with other people like me, and not just other people of color, but outside of a neighbor or a classmate or a kid, you know, the friend of your kid who you know intimately. Yeah. There can be an experience where there are people of color that you see out and about, or they're in your personal sphere. And then there are people of color who, because they're not in your sphere, they're distant. And then they have, there's this phrase called the magical Negro. And what I am excited about is to continue being a person who just shows up. Right. So because I'm often I call it the ambassador in a room or in a project or in a city sometimes, where African-Americans, other individuals of color are not prominent, and not being prominent gives the feeling that they/we are quiet. And then when you don't know, you just have your imagination. I mean, you have your imagination, you have biases of news, you have all of the different streams of
baggage.
There's disinterest. Yeah, just baggage, disinterest. There's history, there's confusion. There's a lot of human drama behind why you do or do not have more people of color in your personal sphere, why you do or do not have more conversations with members of LGBTQ, why you do or do not know more vegans. We are just conditioned in this space to surround ourselves with familiar. And to be the first Black woman to hold this role, I get to enter spaces where I surprise people. Partly because I show up as, who's this person of color in a place where we're not accustomed to having people of color in the room, then people of color at the front of the room, and people of color at the front of the room with an incredible wealth of experience, and just what that does to the dynamics. And as someone who grew up as a military brat, I've been the only Black kid in classes, in grade levels, in rooms. I've been the only person of color at conferences. I've been the only person of color at boardroom tables. And there is a unspoken and unwritten expectation that I am now carrying the water and the ambassador, like I said, for every other Black person on the planet. And no one wants to hold that. And at the same time, I have an incredible privilege and a duty in my, the way that I walk my life, to hold space for all the other incredibly talented Black women who are not in this room, who will be judged because they walk into a room just being a Black woman, who will be made, assumptions will be made about how I move. Questions will be whispered about how I speak so well, and so many other tropes that really speak to the relationships that we have this day and age, this day and time, especially with a band of bandits ravaging our capital. This is the time where I get to bring that lifetime experience of being in the room and being myself, an exceptional human being, as I believe personally we all are. But I know how I walk through the world. And if I get to walk through the world and I get to remind you that what you think you thought you knew about Black people, Black women, women in general, poets even, just me showing up because of the way that I live my life is going to make you think differently. And maybe drastically and maybe not drastically. So my role is honestly to be in a space where to show how representation matters. I don't have to do anything else. I don't have to speak. I don't have to wax on about Maya Angelou or Langston Hughes. I don't have to read all of my poems that are about injustice and collard greens and raising a beautiful Black daughters. I don't have to do that. Believe me, world, I am. I don't have to make that happen because being in this position, just visibly showing up, reminds people what's possible, encourages folks to see themselves in all types of places. So I'm excited about just showing up physically, being in that space, and then sharing my stories as well.
Dasha Kelly Hamilton with us, Wisconsin's Poet Laureate for this year and next. What kind of poems do you like to read? Are you a fan of poems about love or social issues? Have you been part of a virtual poetry slam in the pandemic. How did it go? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Dasha Kelly Hamilton here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're spending the hour with Wisconsin's new Poet Laureate here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Poet Laureate Commission is made up of poets, lovers of poetry across the state. The commission selected Dasha Kelly Hamilton of Milwaukee to be its next ambassador for a 2-year term. She's also serving out her term as Milwaukee's Poet Laureate, which she was selected for in 2019. What poets are helping you get through this pandemic? What is it about their words? Do you share poetry on Valentine's Day? Tell us about the poetry in your life. 800-642-1234. And Poet Laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton stays with us for the hour. Dasha, as we've been talking about, you know, themes of racial injustice, themes of Black Lives Matter and human rights, about imagining society with more equity, I'm thinking about your poem, Hope is a Bruise. Could you read that for us?
Certainly. Come on, computer, here we go.
It's the computer, always.
I'm just getting it to scroll for me. Paintball pellets batter shoulders and thighs at 190 miles per hour. I count the purplest bruises and smile at the post-vision of us, toasting and laughing, being vibrantly alive. The woman who pierced my nose rushed outside afterwards for a cigarette. Whether my nostril or her nerves were to blame, we both survived an ordeal that day. I don't think of the sweat on her lip or the tears on my cheek when my jeweled black nose disrupts canonical spaces. Agony delineates childbearing from child rearing. Pain is the anticipated toll, the impossible stretch of skin and orifice, wrenching of organs, the pinch and nip of nursing. I receive no pamphlets about the pangs or panic and impotence, the deep marrow rupture when their ache explodes beyond your reach, or formation of police, fired rubber bullets at my child. 200 feet per second in defense of hatred and spiteful ignorance. She raged back in protest until her throat rasped, her heels blistered, and she shattered into sobs once safe inside our home, in my arms. They gassed and maced my baby. And she marched again the next day, and the next, and the next, and the next, and the next. Hope is a bruise, a nervous smoke, and an unrelenting Calvary.
Wow. There is so much there, and pain in so many versions, but pain can be good and bad. Mm-hmm. How did you approach this, and what headspace were you in?
It was, I've been trying to describe what this experience has been, just overall, and then of course the intensity of these last 4 years and the unbelievable flame that has raged this year, particularly since the murder of George Floyd. And when we across the country and in Milwaukee, of course, started taking into the streets to peacefully protest against this latest travesty, this latest violent attack against a culture with the death of this one man. It's in the middle of a pandemic also, and I'm also very mindful of, as my husband would kind of look at me and my daughter would kind of shake their head, I'm the one who just envisions, I call it Rona spittle, just hovering in the air. You know, so I'm definitely that one. You know, my daughter, like, yeah, she doesn't really leave the house much. No, I'm in the backyard and I'm making sense as all we are of this time. And then you have these other layers of emotions that are happening. So a part of me is giving myself permission to not literally be boots on the ground in the marches. Not that I typically go to protests. I have a theory that oftentimes smaller marches before this summer, they make the protesters feel good. And the people who should be moved by these protests will roll their blinds, walk away from the window, turn off the news, and not care that hundreds of people are marching in the streets about a thing. And this is, we had more than a few hundred. We have these legions of social justice warriors and new and veteran together marching the streets to make a collective stand about the times that we're in. And then there's my child who is now, she's a third year in college. So she's grown up. She's gone to events and lectures and poetry events. So she's not unaccustomed to the idea of being an active part of a social movement.
Yeah.
But this is my child who's heading out there. And so all of that as a parent, I had a lot of my students who are also now, I call them neo-grown, who are putting their life experiences and time literally at the front line. So I'm proud. So I have that happening in my chest also.
It feels almost like this whole hurricane of things. There's so much in there.
There was so much. And the thing of having the things that were happening in the moment and the things that have been layered that you're processing over the course of time. And I was trying to describe it as when it gets to this peak moment of the summer, even up to today, where you hear those stories of people who've been in near-death experiences and they've been impaled by, you know, a fence post or something got cut off and they're not in pain. They're not screaming. They're perfectly calm. You're just in shock. Mm. So that's been the feeling of, especially on the end of wanting to write things, because I'm pushing through confusion and fury and I'm disbelieving what I'm watching happening around me. And this moment where she came home, part of her was the field trip excitement that I'm relating to when she was little. And the big part is how angry she was and tapping into holding space for that. And then here's just this human being who's disappointed and sad and angry and exhausted. And she literally falls into my arm crying.
Oh.
And that was this moment that was able to, like if you had an experience and you just haven't been able to cry about it, you haven't been able to yell about it. That was a moment that for all of these years and layers and terrors and long conversations about the health of our country at that moment, this gave me a glimpse of a way to write about it. Because every other time I've thought about trying to sit and write or have a conversation, you want to attack everything. You want to solve everything. And you can't, I can't express a lifetime of being a Black woman in this country in one poem. No one can capture all of the questions and feelings that we are all experiencing in this tumult in one poem or one conversation. And that can be frustrating when, as a creator, this is what you go to write some poems, to make sense of the world. And this was that cry. This was that yell. Wow. This was that poem that was able to help me put a lot of perspective into one piece.
Sorting it out with some choice words. Dasha Kelly Hamilton is the new poet laureate for Wisconsin, and she's been a public poet for over 20 years. And she's sharing what she's working on with poetry, as well as poetry as a vehicle for change. Taking your questions about poetry, 800-642-1234. Dasha, may I ask you, we're reaching you far away from Milwaukee. May I ask what are you doing in Anchorage, Alaska?
I know.
I didn't know if we could ask it, but I'm going to ask it. So
no, it is the burning question. I mean, who snowbirds in Alaska? That's definitely back. That's just all backwards. This is it. I'm in Anchorage. I'm snowboarding in Anchorage and getting accustomed to this space. My husband and I actually dated long distance between Milwaukee and Anchorage for about 3 years.
Wow.
And not surprisingly, we met through poetry. And I coached a team of there's an international spoken word competition called Brave New Voices. And it's a competition for young people between 13 and 19 years old. And I coached the Wisconsin team for many, many years. So probably 2006, I joined the team at UW-Madison, the First Wave program, as a coach, and then took over managing the team in probably 2012-ish. So around that time, my husband Kima was bringing a team of Anchorage teenagers to Brave New Voices for the first time. And because I'd been going for so many years, I absolutely knew that he was a new coach. So absolutely knew that. And so we could, you know, connected, and that first year it was just meeting, you know, sparks flew. And then 2 years later, we met again and sparks flew. We dated for 3 years. We got married in Alaska. We both taught in Milwaukee and Anchorage. And he moved to Milwaukee for a few years. And now he's back because his kids are reaching high school level. So I'm here visiting.
Wisconsin's new poet laureate. We're visiting with Dasha Kelly Hamilton as our guide to the poetry in our lives. She's helping us further poetry in our state for the next 2 years and taking your questions about poetry, 800-642-1234. We'll be back with her after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're visiting with Wisconsin's new poet laureate serving a 2-year term. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Dasha Kelly Hamilton is with us, a novelist and author of several poetry collections and 4 spoken word albums. Fun fact here, in 2007, she performed in the last season of HBO's Deaf Poetry Jam. What do you want to ask our new poet laureate? Do you have a poem to share or an excerpt from one you hold dear? What have you learned from being part of Poetry Slams? It's 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. And Wisconsin Poet Laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton stays with us for the hour. You know, Dasha, Poetry Slams and spoken word performance have been such a big part of your life. How do you see their role in the overall umbrella of poetry, if you will?
I love that language. Thank you. The umbrella of poetry. And it is that. And I love that because it's reminding folks over the years that slam poetry, spoken word, is not a it's not a type of poetry, like a haiku necessarily. It's not. And it's definitely not a lesser form of poetry because it is spoken, because it is it's more like folk art. Right. Compared to traditionally trained oil paintings, per se. So for me, spoken word, honestly, is what brought me to poetry. So I'd had the poetry exposure in school, like so many folks. And it wasn't until I was an adult, honestly, and was able to go to, and was invited to go to spoken word events. And the experience of seeing a person share something that they wrote, because it's going to mean something to them, different from me reading words that I enjoy from someone else who wrote them, who's not here. And there's, we're making guesses about what they mean. Anyway, that's what I felt like in high school, that the teachers were making up these meanings, but I digress. spoken word. And it's because of you are not separating the human from the story. Mm-hmm. And then you have the experience of the culture of what an open mic, what a spoken word, what a poetry reading does. You've got people in a room reacting to these stories, to this language. And I just over and again, seeing how the room would shrink. And then you add the element of competition. When we were first introduced to Poetry Slam, there was an open mic series that I curated, and we would invite performers. You know, there's a whole other universe out there, and there are spoken word poets, and this is their career. You know, they travel from city to city, and they have books and CDs and performances and workshops and lectures. And we, our first national feature that we brought in was Doug Kearney, who's a poet out of Minnesota, who has gone on now to, he's an instructor at MFA programs, he's published, he's won all kinds of awards, and he started doing the open mic scene. So one by one, it was like a, you could bring a poet from Milwaukee, Chicago, from Minneapolis in the area, and then they're coming from across the country. And what I started to see on their resumes where they placed XYZ in these poetry slams, tell me more. Mm-hmm. And so you add the carrot of competition, just as human nature is shaped, it just makes you approach anything with a different kind of attention. So you're putting more attention into the words, into them being explosive, into how you perform them.
And then you're in front of an audience, and there's that pressure and reaction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the rules of the slam, the way the audience gets engaged is you can go to a venue and you were just going expecting to have dinner or have a drink or just catch the show. And the way a poetry slam is structured, the judges are randomly pulled out of the audience. So the whole concept of poetry slam was put in place to bring poetry out of the ivory towers of academia and into the common folk and into the hands and mouths of common folks. And that's where poetry started, reminding us all that we all have access to this art, that we all honestly think and speak in poems anyway. And living is finding words to explain that explosion of an emotion that happened in your heart, that flush of a wish or a frustration. That's what poems do. And we live that every day. And spoken word and poetry slams bring an excitement to it that remind us all that we all have access to this art. So mm-hmm. through time, you know, you had the attention, I would say, of page poets and stage poets, where if you are attuned to all of the classics, then the fact that someone else as a poet is performing pieces that don't have a pentameter, don't fall into a format, and are maybe don't have a different rhyme scheme, that somehow that those poems didn't, air quotes, count. Mm. And like anything else that evolves, once upon a time, jazz music didn't count. Once upon a time, having a book digital instead of on paper didn't count. So we have things that we aren't used to. And the incoming new thing is always discounted because it's how we are as humans. And I'm incredibly excited to have been a part of a transformation. And I didn't do the transforming. I can definitely speak to this language of standing on shoulders, of walking in the wave of greats, of following in a tradition that work was done before my pen ever showed up. So I came on the scene in spoken word and slam around the time that Patricia Smith was exiting the scene. So she came in as a journalist. She hit the scene as in doing spoken word and poetry slams. And she is now has won national book awards, and she teaches all over the country. She is one of our greats as a poet, recognized as a poet, and no longer discounted because she came out of the tradition of spoken word. You cannot deny the talent of her pen, and you cannot deny the stories that she's been brought here to share with us. And one by one, I'm looking at my peers that I've watched on spoken word slam stages. Anise is the poet laureate of Oregon. Deborah Mouton, who goes by Deep, the poet laureate of Houston. So we are being recognized in the academy as the artists and writers that we are. And similarly, our art form or the art form of spoken word and performance art is shaped by the rigor of the attention that it requires to really have a poem stand on its own on a piece of paper. Mm. So I really appreciate being able to do both. And I've always coached my students that, yeah, what you just did in front of us was fantastic. Snap, 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 snap. That was exciting. And what are you talking about?
Well, I want to hold that thought on students here as we talk with Dasha Kelly Hamilton, the new poet laureate for Wisconsin. She's been a public poet for more than two decades, and she's spreading poetry across the state. Let's bring in Rit now in Madison. Hi, Rit.
Hi, Kate and Dasha. My daughter Ella traveled with you to Brave New Voices for at least a couple of the 4 years that she participated.
Oh, my whole heart, yes.
Well, I I heard your voice, and I recognized you. I thought I had, and then I heard that you were our new poet laureate, so congratulations. No one's more deserving. I think it's fantastic. And I wanted to tell you that our daughter is in the first wave group at UW now, and she's in her second year, and she's studying creative writing and has taught us an awful lot. I mean, I'm a songwriter, and I teach French at the UW. I'm very deep in language and in expression, and the thing I've really enjoyed watching in our daughter, both of whose brothers are kind of creative people too, but in her own way, she's found this really interesting way through the kind of poetry you've been describing to both, and she and her colleagues and friends and co-poets, you know, have first, you know, you're in eighth grade or something, and you realize you can express yourself through language, but then there's this deeper practice, like this discipline and practice and a real attention to the tools, not to mention the broader kind of democratic focus of, you know, social justice and inclusion of everyone of us through poetry, but just the work, like the workshopping of the work she does. And I just really appreciate that. I hope that you can just spread that throughout the state, just because I think the combination of, I think a lot of, you know, feeling part of things and feeling like you're expressing yourself and all that comes with becoming good at something as well. And I think that poetry is a great vehicle for that, as far as I can see.
Rit, thank you so much. Dasha, the evolution of your students here and what words there, that is just beautiful.
Oh my goodness. And I, if you can just envision me, hand on my face, I'm leaning and I've got that mama smile. I really appreciate hearing from you, Rit. Thank you for that. And I absolutely remember Mel Ellen. In fact, I had a chance to see her earlier this year. She is a part of the program I was mentioning earlier that I used to do coaching and recruitment for. The First Wave program is the only program in the country out of Madison that offers 4-year full tuition scholarships for artists who are hail from the hip hop arts. So these are spoken word artists, graffiti artists, break dancers, producers, my husband's gonna kill me. But we were able to go around the country, and to his point, this is something they're excited about. And whether they're young poets or not young poets, the first invitation is, look at this, you have everyone's attention. And I was smiling when Rick talked about, you know, in eighth grade, you're excited because you're being heard. And that experience of, yeah, great, you got to cuss in front of the principal. All right, now what? And there's that excitement of having people's attention. And to his point, then after that wears off, I'm asking, so now what? Now, what do you really have to say? And then it's braving things that they haven't wanted to say, and then the parsing of words. When I talk about poetry as a tool for writers and for non-writers, I, you know, because I love all the words. When you want to explain what had happened, because all the details are essential, you go to your prose. You'll write an essay. You'll write a story. You'll write something that people can read linearly. And when you want to get to the heart of why it matters, the so what of it all, a poem gives you that permission to break language rules and really get into the nut of what it is you're trying to say. And that requires you answering some questions for yourself. Even if I'm going to ask you to describe the sky, do you like what you see or not? If I ask you to describe the day, was it a good day or was it not? And then you find the language to bring me into that emotion. So it really is an incredible exercise of reflection, of discernment and audacity. And you get to truly create a world on these pages, and you get to make sense of the world that's inside of you. And my goodness, when you have young people given the gift of making sense of themselves, the rest of us are going to win in the end.
Oh, our state poet laureate, Dasha Kelly Hamilton, stays with us, encouraging poetry in our lives. She says there's a poet inside all of us. What does poetry mean to you? How does it make you feel? What kinds of poems do you look to in a pandemic? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dasha Kelly Hamilton here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're spending the hour with Wisconsin's new poet laureate, Dasha Kelly Hamilton of Milwaukee. She is our state's ninth Poet Laureate, a 2-year term, and Dasha describes herself as a creative change agent, leveraging the creative process toward human and social wellness. She has 3 poetry collections, a bunch of other creative works, and she served as an arts envoy for the U.S. Embassy. Her stage production called Makin' Cake explores the story of America in a journey through a history of cake. And Dasha is with us for about 9 more minutes. Dasha, Makin' Cake, what is this about?
Makin' Cake was an invitation from the Kohler Art Center to come into the Sheboygan community and create an engagement where we can have a conversation about race. And so I spent some weeks in the community of facilitating these art-based exchanges where I've got markers, we're doodling, I'm asking silly questions, and boom, we're suddenly in one-on-one conversations about our individual experiences and in these times. And the audio from that became the audio at the end of this production. So, and the story came to me as I wanted to do this research of objects. And in looking at cake, you bring people together for cake. You're bringing people together, you know, specifically to be together, to sit, to socialize, to chat, and to enjoy something sweet. And when I started researching the ingredients of cake, I found consistent stories of access and finding other narratives about where were we at the time. So finding out that, for example, once upon a time, it took 4 days to make a cake. Mm. And then we had the invention of baking soda, and it went from 4 days to an afternoon. So before you had that, if you didn't have that time, you needed to have a staff of people, primarily slaves, who had the time to bake a cake for you. Or if you did have the time yourself, hopefully you had the resources to afford sugar. If you couldn't afford sugar, you had to figure out, and on and on and on. And once it became chemically possible for people to bake more easily, happened at the same time where America was becoming a wealthy nation. We're finding a gap, a disparity of income. You have people who are literally dying from malnutrition in the South, while people in the North are literally eating cakes gilded with gold. And this is also the rise of our race-based policies. It was the beginning of relegating women, or defining a role of the great American housewife. And we actually had home demonstration agents that traveled into rural communities initially to teach these new American housewives with these new acres of land that were granted to the government from the Homestead Act, how to can, how to garden, how to cook meat, how to keep their families alive, which was essential.
Yeah.
We were learning about nutrients at that time. And we were also guiding these women to not just teach them how to sew, but how to choose their music and how to raise their children and what time dinner should be and what recipes we're sharing and what it means to be an American housewife. And that's, so there's so many things that were happening in that same nugget of time, interestingly, telling the development of how we all began to bake cake, how we, some of our cake recipe, you know, our popular cake recipes became popular cake recipes. Even inside of this, the whole narrative of the story is even inside something as simple as cake, there is a history of a deliberateness in creating distinct Americas,
yeah,
in creating distinct experiences. And at the end of the show, we actually have a cake reception. And the show itself is me telling these stories. I have projection, I have little movies, and I have 2 bakers on stage baking a cake live.
Wow.
While we're having this conversation. And so at the end of it, we fall together as an audience, and they come on stage depending on the venue and serve the cake. And we have conversations about what they heard, have conversations and answer questions about how we're all here. And no one is angry over cake, even though we're talking about having a conversation that in any other setting could be uncomfortable, mm-hmm. could be painful. And we have a knee-jerk reaction to how we fall into these conversations about inequity. And this, the engagement, from the engagement all the way to the cake reception after the end of the show, it's an opportunity to have this hard discussion, removing the guilt, removing the finger pointing, removing the defensiveness, and let's just talk about where we are.
Yeah.
Let's agree that we are in a place, and let's just, and if I can offer some insight on how we got here, then that removes the, it's not about me, that removes the, oh no, you can't possibly feel that way. And we can look at the stark ingredients of race, class, and equity in our nation. And we can't move forward if we can't accept where we are. And even accepting where we are, it's not saying that this is not the most delicious place to live. One of the lines in this show is, I can't tell you how your cake tastes. You can't tell me mine isn't dense. But we can all agree that every bite of this American cake is delicious.
Mm.
And so I'm really excited about the art of the production itself.
Yeah, I mean,
the intention of getting us all together.
We're in a pandemic, but what is the future of this stage production?
I'm excited to say this: the stage production was picked up this summer in a pandemic, ironically, and so I now have people. I have people, Kate. and so the show was picked up by an artist management company over the summer, and they are right now booking dates. So when the theater world opens up,
wow.
Cake will be one of the shows that are online. So in fact, I'm already scheduled to be at the Pablo Center in February of 2022, as well as UW Oshkosh. We've done Milwaukee. We've been in UW Green Bay, and incredibly excited to share this experience because conversations are the way to get anything done. And as a creator, as an artist, to be able to put my creative brain into the mix of bringing us all together my way, is an honor, and I certainly hope an encouragement to all creators, whether you're an artist or not, but you have a way to create space for us to be together. And I'm personally inviting you to do that, all you creatives out there. Mm-hmm. I know the world keeps telling us to go
so
to the
inspiring.
NBA folks. They can tell us to go to the business people and the politicians, but artists, creatives, we're part of this nation too.
Man,
and
there's
we
the vision.
We have the vision.
Let's bring in Nancy and Sheldon. Nancy, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to add about poetry?
Well, my father, and I'm very lucky, he was an avid reader, a politician, a gardener, and he taught us this poem, or this limerick, he called it. And it goes like this. A man stood on a burning bridge. His pants was full of fire. He stooped and he laughed and he felt a cold draft. And he knew right away he had tore him. And that was his limerick, amongst many other.
Well, Nancy, thank you for sharing that. And, you know, limericks are a part of this too, Dasha.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We had one of the years at the National Poetry Slam competitions, all of the teams from all of the cities were instructed to come with a limerick to introduce ourselves. So each city comes up and their team and has a limerick that they prepared. And I love going to those forums because they're short and their limericks are usually funny. And just as she demonstrated, they stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not huge on haikus, largely because math is involved. It's a whole other sad story. It's a whole other sad story, Kate. But there's one that I do remember, Oscar Brown, and he said, "Oh, so you want me to love you the way you would love you if you were me?" Yes, man. That's exactly what we're asking for. That's exactly it. He gets it. So I love those little short forms, and the message can stick with us in a way. Thank you for sharing that. I'm so glad her dad shared that with her.
Well, Dasha, thank you for joining us and sharing your talent with us. All the best on being an ambassador.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Dasha Kelly Hamilton is Wisconsin's Poet Laureate for 21-22. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.